all turn towards the flag and repeat after me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
No, you can't leave yet. We have to know about you.
All right. My name is Matt Hoff. I was born in Boston, Massachusetts. My family moved to California in 1984. I graduated from the University of California at Santa Barbara and came to Morro Bay to get kind of out of the hustle and bustle of Santa Barbara. I got a job with State Park Services in San Simeon, and somebody tipped me off that there is a hiring for the reserve position at the Morro Bay Harbor Patrol. And I tried out, and this October will be my second year. I absolutely love the job. I really like being a servant to the public, and I love the water and diving and all aquatic sports, so I really feel like it's a really good fit, and I look forward to being with the city for as many more years as they'll have me.
Great. Thank you very much, Matt. Okay, announcements and presentations. What I'd like to do is pull A4 and have move to approve that now. And then I would like to just read this, and we'll be done with that one. This is about Airport Day.
Did you make a motion?
I'll make a motion if
go ahead.
Mr. Pierce wants to second it.
I'll second it.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? None. Okay, this is August 20th. This is going to be San Luis Obispo County Airport statistics include 490,341 commercial passengers served, 19,824 commercial flights completed, 1,541 local jobs provided, and money generated in daily revenues within the San Luis Obispo service area is $389,000. So that's pretty impressive. You don't realize for such a little airport how much business it does and what it brings to the county. So we join them in their celebration, and that is open to the public, and there'll be 50 planes there. So something to see. The Merchant Street Fair was held yesterday. It was a great success, as always. And I just wanted to thank Lisa Marie, who has been in charge of that for the last couple of years. She's done a wonderful job coordinating it. And she is retiring from that to pursue her legal career. But just wanted to publicly thank her for her help with that. And that's all the announcements that I have, other than the fact that we have a very full agenda tonight, so I'm going to ask everyone to be as brief as possible in both your public comments and us in our comments so that we can get through as much of it as we can. Other announcements? Bill?
This is one that I just got handed, so if I read it, it's because it's definitely not memorized. I sit on the Board of Directors of the Air Pollution Control District, and I know that they agonize over all meeting all the air quality requirements, and I just wanted to announce publicly that they've been awarded a certificate of excellence for high marks in meeting the air monitoring data objectives. They maintain there are it's not the only certificate. There were a number of districts.
Yes, I have three announcements. One that you were involved in, just to say that the Marine Mammal Center was dedicated this past Thursday.
Yes.
And it was a very nice reception, and it's now open for business, and it's a nice facility. And
however, it's not open to the public. We
right.
need to make that clear. It is a hospital for these animals, so it is not open to the public. But they said they probably will give tours every so often. So
it's open to the animals.
Yes.
And they're looking forward to opening a facility for the birds, the seabirds, in the future. This Thursday is our joint powers agreement over the sewer plant, which will be in Cayucas at their elementary school at 7 o'clock, if anyone's interested in attending. And then a week from Thursday begins the fish and game meetings over in San Luis Courthouse. 10 or 10:30 in the morning, probably someone will be out to speak to that, and it will run for 2 days, Thursday and Friday, and the public is welcome to attend.
Okay. Dad? Okay. And we had no closed session. Amazing. So we have no closed session report. And there's some plants up there. I don't know what those are. Okay. So we will go to the public comment period. And please limit your comments to 3 minutes or less if you can, because we got a lot of business tonight.
Good evening, Mayor.
Good. Thank you for lining up. That helps keep things moving.
Members of City Council, I'm Ed Biagini, Chairman of your Community Promotions Committee, and I'm here to speak on items D2 and D3 coming up later on your agenda, maybe. First, item D2 deals with the role of the Community Promotions Committee, and I hope you all had a chance to watch Tom Jones Advertising. We will keep John up to speed on all the current events and activities, and he will make sure that they're posted properly and hopefully enhance some of the buttons you click on for events and make pictures and try to change some of those pages. The second motion we made was to let council know that we would like to keep together, as we now are, with representatives from all segments of the tourism industry in Morro Bay, as well as members at large. We feel that we are being very effective at getting the word out about Morro Bay, and we will continue to work at other ways to enhance our effectiveness. Third and lastly, we're asking City Council to hold a joint meeting with us prior to making any changes, if any are proposed tonight, so that we may have a discussion and clarify our goals, our relationship with the Visitor Center, as well as any other questions you may have for us. We're looking forward to continue to serve both the business as well as the residents by providing the most effective and economical marketing services that we can. And then on item D3, while we didn't discuss this item, when I saw it was on the agenda, I just wanted to make a comment and say that we'd like to stay at our current 7-member committee. And we think that because of the workload, the kinds of ideas, the way we function, that 7 of us it takes to get that all done. And that's about all. And thank you.
Thank you.
My name is John Biondi. I live at 2176 Main Street. I've got a business on the Embarcadero, 725 Embarcadero. I'm here to complain about the lady that advertises on the street corner that's from the city to my attorneys today. I also sent down a copy of your sign ordinance. She's in violation of approximately 5 different local ordinances. She's in violation of 3 state ordinances. The biggest one, soliciting in the street. Your sign ordinance, she's in violation of that. Something has to be done about her. These flyers are all over the Embarcadero every weekend. She's standing out there telling the people that do not go in these stores because their prices are too high. It isn't right. I pay a lot of money, my 5% that comes to the city, and she's totally bad-mouthing everybody on the Embarcadero. I do not want to go back to an attorney, and I do not want to file suits, but I will. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Biondi. We have looked into that, and she's very good at observing the letter of the law, but we'll check it out again.
I'm really just here to support my neighbor. The same problem. If you guys are trying to present, Ron Boone, trying to present this as a tourist town, I don't think you want someone standing on the corner telling people to get off of the what she refers to as a tourist strip because the prices are too high. You have to go up 2 blocks to her store to get good deals. I mean, it's just not good for anyone. It's not good for the town. It's not good for any of the businesses. But she hustles people to get them up to her store, and she lies to them to do that, and I've called her on it. She told me to kiss her ass, so she's pretty thick-skinned.
Thank you.
I'd like to see you spend more time trying to avoid it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council. My name is John Barta, and I'm speaking here as a former planning commissioner, partly, and then later we'll talk about something else. I'm speaking on item A3 relating to the sign ordinance and what happened and didn't happen at the previous planning commission, which I sat on. If you'll read the whereas language of your thing, it'll say that there were hearings held in July and October. However, we did no substantive review of the ordinance if it's the one that was presented by the consultant. What we did decide is that the ordinance was very different than what we had in mind, and that rather than bog the process down, we would lay that to the side, not review it, and not make a recommendation to the council at this time, the upcoming council, on that item. It strikes me that this is a serious procedural flaw, since the Planning Commission, I believe, is required to review the zoning ordinance amendments before they can be passed by you. So you've got a substantial procedural problem there on your hands. I'd also like to speak briefly about the Morro Bay Merchants Association meeting street fair. I'm the vice president, as you may or may not know. And, you know, we had a really good fair, and I want to particularly thank the Morro Bay Police Department for the goodwill and support that they gave us during the fair. We had a really good time, and we look forward to another one. We're also using money from this fair to run a whole other round of ads at no cost to the city this holiday season, and those ads are being worked on this week. Lastly, I'd like to say that I'm a little bit surprised about the website situation with the city. As many of you know, I've at no cost to the city, I provided the first major visitor website to the city. I've made numerous presentations to the Community Promotions Committee, and my thanks, you know, for all that I've done was I've, number one, never been thanked by the Community Promotions
Committee owner in Morro Bay. I'm here this evening to speak on behalf of Keeping the Promotion Board. I attended the last meeting Monday night and was shocked that the City Council would even think about getting rid of our only real marketing tool for what I consider a destination resort. I feel that after 4 years of serving on the Promotion Board that I have a good understanding of what is going on. Getting together as a mini group to work on problems is a great idea, but I headed up an ad hoc committee which was comprised of one person from each city board, and after a month the group got smaller, and the next month was a little bit smaller, and soon I was doing the signage all by myself, and there was no one to bounce the ideas off of. So breaking into small groups is not the answer, nor expecting the present board to create events that will cost money and a lot of time. The city already has lost a great event that they didn't sponsor, the Jazz Festival, because of lack of money and support. I'm still hoping that Gary Ryan will bring it back. The 2020 group had some great ideas, but the bottom line is what this town needs is economic stability, year-round visitors, which will be created by events and marketing. The city of Morro Bay should run as an incorporated business, which it is. Our leaders should have business backgrounds so they can understand the past and future problems without taking up our now small city staff for their lack of knowledge. Selling assets and property does not balance a budget. It's only a Band-Aid. We lost a lot of great people this year. I will assume you'll be meeting at least twice on a monthly basis to balance this budget. Anyway, in the 4 years that I served on the Promotion Board, we achieved a lot of great goals. Our advertising agent, Tom Jones, and associates are wonderful. We were able, in the few good years of a strong budget, set up a top-of-the-line website for those of you who know they cost a lot of money to keep updated. As our marketing agent, we could never have gotten the banner ads and a lot of the combo packages that were offered through him for our city. We are fighting for the same visitor dollar as the other cities. We need our promotion board. They can still function on a small budget for a year or so, so don't take it away. And for the residents, if you're planning an event, please call the Chamber of Commerce Visitor Center to get it on the website or co-op with another business for advertising. Thanks.
Thank you. Hi, David.
Hi. Hey, good evening. My name is David Weissman. I'm speaking on behalf as, the freshman member of the Promotions Board, having only been appointed this year. And I would like to second the comments made by our chairman, Mr. Biagini. For those of you who did see the meeting on Monday, I think we made a good headway. We heard a number of people mention one of the issues being there are groups that are interested in bringing large events to Morro Bay, lots of hotel rooms and restaurants to be filled, but they couldn't have coordination with the facilities that were available here. There were local events. Overcoming this seems to me not an obstacle that requires a lot of capital or infrastructure, but it's what I would call a software problem, which is moving things around on a sheet or a calendar. And that these are the kind of issues that I think the Promotions Committee would look forward to working with other city departments on, so that we can maximize the dollars that can bring to the city. The city is a tourist place. Maybe my first few summers here were spent in the sun, and so I was fooled into thinking the summers here were warm and sunny, and that's why this summer has come as quite a shock to me. However, I did also ride down Morro Bay Boulevard and Main Street yesterday Saturday night, and noticed the no vacancy signs. And as I said, it's a software issue. I lived in New York during the 1970s, in early 1980s, when the city was in deep decline. It was crime capital. It was murder city. And, you know, they came up with that campaign to turn New York City around in the 80s with that memorable, catchy phrase and that symbol, I love New York. And they did it because they got the people of the city involved. It isn't just, I would say, the promotions committee that has to do this, but it's the people who have to make it that kind of place, regardless of our own individual peccadilloes with regards to the tourists from Friday through Sunday. So just to toss a few things out, you know, I wanted to get a badge of Minute Machine to do this, but I couldn't find one in such short notice. But, like, here's for the MTV crowd, for example. Okay? Catchy, to the point. I don't really know how to do those kind of zigzag fonts that are the best, but, you know, I was thinking something, there we go, something along those lines. And to take a cue from New York, where I was born and raised, you know, something kind of along the line of, you see, just a friendly little thing that's on your lapel that lets them know, ask me for a restaurant recommendation. I must have that face that says, ask him. No matter what street I'm on, it's the face of, excuse me. And, or I see them and I sort of second guess it in advance, like, you look like you're thinking about something. Yeah, my husband and I can't figure out where to go. Well, what are you looking to eat? Where, in a sense, if everyone becomes an ambassador of goodwill, and that's kind of a zen sort of a thing, but you create an ambience that, and I want to use the phrase lightly, money can't buy, in spite of all the, and we don't have those advertising dollars, so we have to create that. Right. And I hope we can as a committee. Thanks.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Wanda Durek, and I live in Morro Bay. I think in recent discussions about to see the new and improved signs in our city. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Betty Forsyth, and I love New York, too, because I was born, raised, and went to college there and everything. But I want to tell you, I love Morro Bay better. And I couldn't believe that a transplant, and I could say that living in the city was great, but here you're connected with family. And what I found out when I was reading books like Morro Bay Remembered, the helping hands that Mary J. Moses has done and Jane Bailey in recording that history, and Nancy Castle still working to get the World War II stories down. I mean, those are helping hands that are the soul and spirit of the community. And I'm so proud to be here and being blossoming in my old age, living here in Morro Bay. Anyway, thanks to all the people that have been helping hands in the past, and we are going to have more helping hands in the future, and we're planning a Green Thumb celebration because we're renovating the library in phase one with the help of Sarah McCordless, and we are getting the place where the grape stake is, where Ransom Rideout and Stan Benskin and them had helped, and Angie Kreider had helped many years ago. We're getting it all redone and rejuvenated and renovated because the plants are old. And even though these plants here are not the plants we're planting, it's to think about green and jade, you know, assisting us to get the land prepared. And the plants are going to be a beautiful array of colors, and they're going to be drought resistant and maintenance free. We ask people to bring garden gloves, water, hats, shovels, or even to sing songs to get the chain gang going. So we need helping hands, and the numbers are 772-0792 or 772-9093 if you wish to make any contacts. Thanks again. Okay. Bye.
And that's our planning commissioner, Sarah McCandless, who's donating that work.
Good evening, council members, Madam Mayor. I'm John Sorgenfrey, the owner of Tom Jones & Associates, and we are your advertising agency and media advisor and had that role for a number of years, which we're very proud of. Ed Biagini, as the chairman of the promotions committee, asked me to come tonight to share some web stats that we just attained. It's a new way of getting some information that's been very valuable. It shows where our sites are, where our responses are coming from. And I want to share that with you in a moment, but I also want to take this opportunity to personally thank you. Thank you for making some hard decisions relative to the budget and still preserving a portion of our budget for tourism. I want to tell you, as the owner of my company, that even though our compensation has been reduced as a result of the budget, the level of service will not be reduced. That you've been a loyal client of ours for a number of years. We're going to do everything we can to make sure Morro Bay gets its full share of media coverage. But I've got some stats here that I wanted to share with you. What we're trying to do is to, through the software we have on our website, is to try to gain more information, not just how many people came to a site, but who are they, where are they coming from, how are they getting to us, so we can clarify our advertising that much more. If you look, our average users per month is right on with that. Is incredibly important. Predominantly, it's our source now for referrals from advertising. When somebody sees an ad, a 1-column by 6-inch ad in Sunset, all we can do with that ad is tease them and then get them to come to the website. And if you look at the bottom statistic here, I think this is where I know there's been some discussion about the website and its effectiveness, and maybe it could stand alone as its own marketing for the city. And I apologize. I've got some hard copies here for you to look at your leisure. But that first column, which is the predominant one, which is roughly close to 40% of how people come to the site, says no referral. And that means they didn't go to Google. They didn't go to Yahoo. Basically, what they did to be able to come to that is they typed in www.morrobay.org. And I think it's safe to say that the majority of those people that typed that in did that off of an ad response. You may argue if it was .com, maybe people thought that that would be the way to attain it. But since our site is fairly unique and that we have .org, over, as I said, close to 40% came to us through our advertising of letting them know that that's how they can find out more information. Then the second one is is Google, which is close to 20%. And I think even a case could be made there, even if somebody just typed in Morro Bay, there is a motivating reason for them to have done that, either through an advertisement, public relations. We certainly have loyal visitors that are over in the valley that may come to our site periodically, but what we're really trying to achieve here is new visitors. And I thank you again.
Thank you. Are you going to leave that information for us?
Yes.
Okay.
Ray McElligott, Morro Bay, about this chamber and the promotions committee. It seems strange to me that all they seem to be doing is getting tourists to come here so they can go to the restaurants and motels. But it seems to me they should be working on bringing some kind of things here that'll bring people here. Some item that would draw people here, and that would bring sales tax too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council. My name is Roger Ewing. I'm a Morro Bay resident, and I'd like to address item A2. I caution you about taking a well and allowing its use by a private individual with water that belongs to the city. This is a well that has been capped for many, many years, and the developer has recently changed the property into an RV park. As I understand it, the RV park has water with which to use to water plants and vegetation, etc. So there is no real emergency need for this well to be uncapped. And as I said, it's a well whose water belongs to the city, not to the development or the property. I would hate to think that we could do this and therefore set a precedent. I think it would be dangerous to set a precedent where you give city water to the use of a private individual. And in order to make this well function, many things have to be done. A pump has to be established, electricity has to be supplied, et cetera, all of which the boards at 7 members. I think you've been very well served by having an eclectic opinion and from a diverse public, and if you shrink it down to 5, you lose part of your diversity, you lose part of the input that is important to you. So please keep them at 7. Thank you very much for listening and have a good meeting.
Thank you.
Frank Devine, North Morro Bay. I agree with Roger on the advisory board issue. Before considering approving the creation of a redevelopment agency for Morro Bay, here's some things you might think about first. This is an open-ended debt program. This council might be conservative as to the amount of debt it would choose to incur. However, since the funds take time to accumulate, it's not likely this council would determine the debt. This is a long-term debt program. Will your successors be as responsible as you might be? The very controversial planning department will create projects to be funded by this program. The modest ambitions for a new fire station and public pool, et cetera, sought by this council are likely to be dwarfed by radical ideas for development of the future and future councils. The money will be available, and the power and authority to proceed will be like nothing any of you have ever likely seen before. I witnessed the displacement of several sizable neighborhoods to clear the way for redevelopment in San Jose. Large amounts of people were uprooted from their homes in thriving communities in the name of greater good of the people. This was the beginning of my involvement in politics and anti-annexation battles. And the abuses ranged from gifting seized land for a long time, then its theft. The theft of that which you hold dear. Theft of your family's assets and future assets. Theft of future opportunity. Ever think about a skyscraper in Morro Bay? How about a few of them? With the force of the redevelopment agency at hand, it won't take long for greedy developers to think of it. Not just our own greedy developers. They will come from all over the country looking for opportunity to exploit the situation at a vulnerable California coast location. Our planning department never saw a project they didn't like. Even if this council puts safeguards in place, future councils could and would just as easily remove them to achieve their goals. The radical change to what was a nice town is the reason why I moved to Morro Bay. This is a nice place, partly because no one has had the resources or iron-fisted authority to screw it up. The redevelopment agency would change that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. My name is Meredith Bates, and I'm from Morro Bay. I want to echo what Ed Biagini talked about earlier in terms of the Promotions Committee. As a former member of that committee, I feel really strongly that I don't want to see you all throw the baby out with the bathwater. And there's a lot of good things that were done by the Promotions Committee with the guidance of Tom Jones Agency, and since then to the police department. I think it's called the community liaison person. In my work, I deal with caring for the frail elderly. It's part of my job. And there is a lot of elder abuse in this community. And this particular job, the community liaison officer, has been absolutely critical in helping educate some of our people about the threat of elder abuse. And we're talking financial abuse, identity theft, people getting hurt by children, by caregivers. We're only going to see more of this. It's going to be an epidemic in the future. We have a lot of elderly people here, and we need protection. We need a community officer who's experienced and can help with this problem. So in your wisdom, I hope you find a way to continue this position. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Council. Linda Merrill, Morro Bay resident. I've been riding around town in our trolley, taking pictures and attending our Saturday farmers market, and spent time at the giant chessboard at Centennial Park, and these are some of my favorite photos. This is the farmers market that some people, they're having ice cream down at the ice cream parlor. This is just a family. They decided to eat popcorn in front of the Morro Bay Art Association. It's plunked down, and it's just a darling little couple of shoppers with, see this in a sec, the little shopper. Thought she was really cute. Oops, that was supposed to be at the end. Nancy. This was Richard, and he drives our trolley, and this was a couple of, oh, now we're back. This is the thrift shop, and it was opened during Farmer's Market, and it's newly opened, and I thought it was kind of, oops, that's the interior. Thought it was kind of fun to see the new things around town. Okay, the Express Bar was being painted when I was walking around, and here's this charming young woman on the ladder, obviously painting the bar, and that's the young man inside. If we don't get through these, Nancy says she'll show them at break. Oh, there they are, drinking coffee. We have so many things. These are the chess club members, and they just seem to enjoy sitting there in the sun. Oh, that's a young chess player, I guess his dad. And this is so cute. It's a puppeteer. And the lady on the right, she's with the white caps, and she was helping this little girl on
the chronicler of our events.
Good evening. My name is Joan Solu, and I am here tonight speaking as a private citizen and as a business owner here in Morro Bay. On the agenda this evening is the topic of the Community Promotions Committee and the role that they play. As a motel owner in this city, let me clearly state that the Community Promotions Committee, which may I please remind you, is made up of volunteers, serves this community and its interests in the promotion of tourism. As a result of their effective volunteer efforts, the city receives highly coveted bed tax dollars in a highly competitive market. The marketing of Morro Bay is unique in the essence that, as you well know, we do not sit on a major highway, such as the 101. We are approximately 15 miles off the beaten path. We sit on a scenic highway, thus making the city more of a resort destination. However, we don't have an attraction, such as the Monterey Bay Aquarium or Hearst Castle. Therefore, we don't have their easy name recognition type of bookings. Let's face it, everyone who plays golf knows about Pebble Beach, and anyone who took 10th grade English knows about Cannery Row. Morro Bay isn't like that. Therefore, it takes marketing, 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 time and effort in order for people to remember our name. Sales and marketing take drive and determination, time and money. It takes money to earn money. It takes time spent working to earn time away. The best CEOs and companies give their employees creative license. They pick their brains. They push and drive for expansion, especially in the lean times. They do not limit their employees' ability to perform, that they are freely and willingly giving their creative talents for the promotion of our beautiful city. I wish I had 7 people who voluntarily showed up to my business every day to design and create ways to promote it for me. Instead, our business spends approximately $70,000 annually on marketing efforts. Each dollar we spend benefits us as a business, but equally as important, it benefits us as a city through bed tax, retail and restaurant revenue, and sales tax. Now that you know how I feel, I'm asking you to examine how you feel by answering the following questions to yourselves. Why would you want to limit the time that anyone is willing to freely and voluntarily give you for any reason, whether it is out of civic duty or plain flat goodwill? How well would you function as a council if your time was limited and you only met quarterly? Would you serve the citizens well? Would you be able to accomplish your goals each year? Would you be able to increase the city's revenue? And lastly, what good can come from decreasing the time and effort to market our city in these harsh financial times? Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Norm McTaggart. I'm a citizen of Morro Bay. And I want to preface this by saying that every person has the right to have their own opinion, his or hers. But that opinion should not be expressed when they are ahead of a commission. Now, I turned into the Harper Advisory Board toward the end, and the chair made a comment about tourism that should not have been made, not from his position. He could have made it.
Good
Good evening, Council. Ken Vesterfeld, resident of Morro Bay, proud resident of Morro Bay. I just got back this afternoon around 4:30 from hot August nights over in Reno, and hot indeed it was. It was 104 on the tarmac there at the Hilton parking lot. So I know when I got back, I spoke to a neighbor, and it's getting a little gray here for the past few days, but I'll tell you, I can appreciate it here. Just to echo I've been on the board now of the Chamber of Commerce for 5 years and have worked around the Promotions Committee. Not to add anything more than what has been said, I'm sure you're getting the drift here and what's taking place, and that both of these, Promotion Committee and the Chamber of Commerce, are intricate part of Morro Bay. I don't know how you run a business without promoting. It is indeed a major portion of bringing the people into our beautiful community. So hope your discussions lead that way. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we'll bring it back to the council. Just briefly, nobody's talking about eliminating promotions. We're talking about perhaps refocusing the committee. So just to get that misimpression out of there. Any other responses that anybody has?
The question about the signs.
Oh, what's the situation with the signs that grant funding?
Kim Kimball and I, mayor and council members, the executive director of the Chamber of Commerce, and I met with folks at Caltrans to look into a program they have for directional signage, and we can submit an application. The deadline date is December, and we've got plenty of time to get that in. They don't have funding for the with some recommendations for a the location of the signs. We approve the look of them, and then the next step in the process is to come back to you with a program for installing them. And on a parallel track, we're also trying to seek funding and get approval for the freeway signage, you know, along the same lines. And the funding for that may be unsecured at this time, but we thought as long as we can get the approval to do it, we should just look into it now.
Okay, so there's no conflict with that in the zoning ordinance? I mean, it's a work in progress that we're...
Right.
Okay.
Right. Then it just matters on, you know, what kind of a priority you'd like to place on that, and we'd be happy to pick it up. There are, as you know, quite a few other things we're working on, but we can certainly move that up the list.
Okay. Other responses or questions? All right. Council declaration of future agenda items. Thad? Betty?
I don't have a new item, but I noticed on the list that we received in our mailboxes that my requests about noticing, different forms of noticing, wasn't on that list. So I'd like that found and put back on, please.
Okay. Melody?
Yeah. Sorry. I've got two of them, actually. One I would like to agendize. An agenda planning device, which I think I put in everyone's mailbox, and I've been working with you and Bob on it. Both the agenda planning device, the use of it and the input to it, and some small reformations to the agenda planning process, if I might.
Okay.
Question here about this revenue process that has nothing to do with elections or taxes, but has to do with a council decision. And so I'd like to suggest that we separate that out since we've received so much information about it and discuss the public facilities fee. And I don't even think that we would really need a staff report as we already have all the information.
So you just want to look at just the existing fees and or?
No, it's I see Mr. Boucher was here. What was it you called it today when we were talking about this a little bit, the public facilities fee? It's called the Public Facilities Impact Fee. Oh,
you're talking development impact fees?
Development
Fees,
sorry.
Okay.
It gets called different things with different jurisdictions. But those two things, they've been kind of wandering around a little bit down at City Hall, and I'd like to just bring them up for a discussion and have them or not.
Okay. Bill?
No.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yes, Seth.
Are we doing these unilaterally, or are we having some... people agreeing that they should be on the...
Well, I think that Melody's going to write the staff report on the agenda plan, correct? Betty, we're just looking for her previous request. And
Madam Chair, could I ask for a little definition about the noticing issue as to what
that is, and if staff is needed. We're just confused as to what the item was or is, and what if you need staff's help.
It was with regard to not just noticing that we do for major projects, like, say, the zoning ordinance or the general plan, but it was noticing, like, through the water bills and auxiliary ways of noticing the public when we think there's a would write down some more specifics and take care of that and then bring it to the city manager, and we could look at the different things that might be involved with that. Would that be helpful?
Well, what I was trying to get at is whether this was a discussion of policy, council policies around noticing. Mm-hmm. We had a prior discussion wherein the council adopted a policy that had certain supplemental noticing going out pursuant to funding from the council itself. And so when the supplemental noticing was necessary, the council would approve it, and the additional funding would be provided for that supplemental noticing. That's ongoing and in place, as far as I understand. This evidently sounds like some additional discussion mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. requirements relative to noticing, and mm-hmm. I'm not
yes,
sure
it's not
what
just
it
strictly items that legally have to be noticed, but courtesy noticing maybe would be a word that might address it. And maybe that's what you're referring to?
Well, I'm not sure what I'm referring to. The one thing I am sure of is that we did put in place this one program where we do supplemental noticing when the expenses for it are paid for and it's approved by council. That's already been here, decided upon, and in place. Yeah. But beyond that, I'm not sure what the next discussion is. I guess that's what I'm asking about. And that may be one reason you don't find it on the list. We may have assumed that
it was taken
the
care
other
of.
Decision met the needs of the referral.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me you're looking for an explanation from staff as to what state law or local would be good to look at, what our local ordinance say, what we do right now. For example, it's 300 feet or it's 100 feet mm-hmm. notice. I think that's where you're heading. Is that correct?
I think that's true, making it more strict.
Okay, so you're going to clarify that a little bit?
I will.
All right, and then why don't you bring it back when you have it clarified so okay. we know exactly what we're agreeing to or not.
Okay.
As far as putting on the agenda. Yes, Melanie.
Excuse me if I could follow on that, too. Even though I think most of the work has been done on the two agenda items, or I'll do the one on the agenda planning, I think it might be nice to get a second on it so that Bob will at least put it on his tracking sheet.
On the agenda
plan? The agenda planning device and
okay.
also the
I'll
public
second that. I've been working on it with you as well.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the development impact fee, are you looking just for information?
We have information. I'm looking for a discussion and a vote about whether or not we want
All right,
it.
So we don't need a staff report per se. We just need a
maybe a cover memo to go with the material we already have.
Madam Mayor, I believe your item C2, I think it is. Whoops. No, C1.
Has that in it?
Has attached to it the information to which Councilmember DeMaron is referring. There's a packet of information there relative to development impact fees and some experience of other agencies.
Yeah, so okay. mostly what we concentrate on in our discussion is what people will vote on. And I wanted to just pull this one out to either vote it up or down and just see what we think about it.
Okay. All right. Do we have a couple of other people that are in favor of that? Okay. And minimal staff time. They just need to do
it's
a memo.
It's already
okay.
here.
All right. Okay. That's it for future agenda items. Let's get to our consent calendar while we can. I want to pull A1. I did have a conversation with the Martinis about the lease site situation, and they did ask to talk with us a little bit more before we made a final decision on this. So I wanted to continue it until we have the opportunity to have that contact in closed session.
You want to do that in closed session?
Yeah.
Continue.
That would be, yeah, it's a legal matter,
yeah.
so it would be
I
a closed session discussion.
That, yeah. Is that a motion?
Okay, so I would move that we continue that to an uncertain date. Can we do that until we have time to? Okay.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. And Melody, A2.
Well, on A2, I think I'd agree with one of the residents who did some public comment about this well. On private land. I've checked that we already have wells present at the school and across at Flippo's that pull from the same resource. The city does not need this well. And what the person is asking us to do, who owns the land, is asking us basically to take on this project of enclosing the well, maintaining the well, gaining the permits for the well at great staff time and cost, and then once in return, the ability to use 500 gallons of it, I think, a day or something, I forget what it was, but for irrigation of the property for free. This doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't sound like a good deal at all. It sounds more like we should probably cap this well. I don't think we are supposed to be allowing wells on private land anyway that tap into a city resource. And that I think we should not accept this offer, and that we should instead require this resident to do like any other resident would do.
Your issue?
Yes, ma'am.
Under fiscal impact, it said minor reduction in the water fund revenue. So does he expect us to pay for all of this? Or
no.
I thought he was going to.
What I was getting at there was the water that under normal circumstances they would be using the city supply under a regular water bill, that this would come from that other from the other well that's not currently connected to the city system. So it would be a separate thing. So there wouldn't be a water bill for this particular use. There wouldn't
so instead
be
of paying for the water, he'd be paying for the pumping.
They'd be paying for their own electrical use for their little pump.
And the costs of getting this all put together are to be borne by us or him?
The cost for us to develop the well for our purposes is what I believe that the document is saying that the city would pay for. Mm-hmm. And as Councilmember DeMeritt indicates, it's not something that that we would be looking at doing right away. It's something further down the line, if at all. So at least for the short term, we would be, with the approval of this, we would be looking at a reduction in the potential revenue because, I mean, they are, as it sits right now, they're currently connected to this well and they are using the well for irrigation of their landscaping, at least as far as I know. So they are not currently paying the city for irrigation water. Did that answer the question?
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Yes, and what that sounds like is that they're currently breaking city ordinance then, since you're not supposed to have a private well inside the city. It's been uncapped.
Yeah, the events were, I'm not in development review, so I never looked at the plan, frankly. It's my understanding that it was not discussed during the permitting process.
I don't remember.
It certainly wasn't part of the appeal that came before the council. And it was very, very late in the process that I just, by serendipity, heard from the owner that they had connected, and they were in the process of activating the well. And then it was like, time out. We have regulations here. And that's when this all started, when they submitted the request. And then we started the tennis match on the operating agreement. Mm-hmm.
That's fair.
Okay. Other questions?
I have a question.
Yeah.
Is there a benefit that you can mentioned that the city gains by doing this?
I think there is some benefit. As Councilmember DeMeritt indicated, we have three existing wells in the area now. This putting this fourth well into operation does, to a certain degree, interfere with the operation of the other wells. And just to use round numbers, each of those three wells that we currently have produce about 100 gallons a minute. This one also produces about 100 gallons a minute. If we operate all three of our wells, they will each produce 100 gallons a minute. But if this fourth well is operating at the same time, it will reduce the production from two of the wells as well as itself. So instead of having four wells at 100 gallons a minute, if you're operating at the same time, it would be less than that, but more than three. Is that... I'm probably not explaining this very well.
It doesn't sound like a benefit. I'm looking for a benefit.
A benefit? the benefit would be if you look out into the future. If you look out into the future, it gives us access.
Also reduces our reliance on state water, which we're always told not to have complete reliance on state water because that's what the park would use, although it's a very minor amount. That was another reason we thought by using the well, it is a little bit of a less reliance on state water to show.
Okay, other questions? Yes.
Follow-up to what somebody else asked. As I see in the conditions of the well and supply line easements, item number two says the city shall provide a separate meter, electrical meter. Is that, who reads it, who pays it?
That would be for us. We would, well, PG&E provides it. We would, you know, submit an application for service, and they would install a second service, and then the city would be, at that point, responsible for the monthly billing for that second meter.
Then item three on that same page, city at its sole expense shall maintain and repair the well as necessary to provide for the regular and continuous operation. So basically, as we've all said, we pay for the operation of it, we put it in, we maintain it, and then we give them 500 gallons because it's on their property. Is that right?
Correct.
And this property owner has access to water from the regular city supply?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. Any other questions?
No questions.
I'd like to make a motion then.
Okay.
I'd like to make a motion that we refuse this offer to dedicate this non-potable irrigation well.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Discussion?
My objection is the cost, the installation cost, the ongoing cost, the minimal time that we would use it, probably during the desalinization time in November when the state water's down, and the primary benefit goes to a single individual. And so
formal notice provided to them telling them to cap the well.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, A3, Betty.
Yes. This is the second reading of the zoning ordinance, and I guess I pulled it so I could explain why I'm going to vote no on it. I feel like it's incomplete. I think there's a number of issues that are missing on it. I'd like to do I'm uncomfortable with it in some parts, a lot of it I'm not, but I think I did mention last time that I thought it was almost there, and in reviewing it in my mind over the last 2 weeks, I feel like we're not quite there, and therefore I'm not sure that I can live with the ordinance and the whereases that talks about that it's protecting the city's small town character yet. So I'm just going to vote no.
Okay. Any other discussion on that issue?
Could I have a quick question of Mr. Prater? Hi, Mike. I was just wondering, we had a discussion today about program versus policy and that kind of thing. Has our revision of the zoning ordinance that we've gone through repaired any of that or accomplished any of that that we were talking about today without mentioning those things? But did it take care of any of those?
There was this ordinance is updating the general plan that was sent through the process by the Planning Commission and previous City Council. So all of those programs that were identified under that updated document is since trying to get
zoning ordinance
right.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other comments? Now I hear a motion approving A3.
I move that we approve the second reading and adopt ordinances numbers 511, 512, and 513.
There's a second. Okay, I'll second it. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay. Did you vote?
Yes, I did.
Okay, sorry. All right. Got to read that, Bob? You don't? Okay, it's done. Okay. All right. We're to our public hearings. Thank you all so much for letting us get here this fast, and we'll take a short break, and then we'll start our public hearings. She is outside still?
What is this?
A That's from John Sorgenfrey. Okay, we're waiting for... There she is. Okay.
George Contento, who is also the appellant who appealed this project. The Planning Commission recommended a denial and passed findings as such on two issues, one being the fact that they felt they didn't warrant a variance request, and the second is that the configuration of the open space was not of the liking to the Planning Commission. So I'll go through my presentation and explain those two cases, scenarios to you. Essentially, the project was to subdivide the existing two lots and create four parcels for the intent of selling those. Those lots varied in size, all of which were under 6,000, hence the need to go through the community housing provision to create lots less than 6,000. The site is located at Shasta, which is in an R2 zone district. So the applicant had enough site area with the two lots to qualify for a community housing type of project. Here's an existing aerial showing the existing single-family and apartment buildings and detached garage on the site as it exists today. Here's a site plan representing those. The three yellow buildings are residential units with some accessory units, garage and shed. Some site photos looking onto the project. So here's sort of kind of a busy map. This is the parcel map of what it's supposed to look like. The next slide hopefully helps. The parcel A shown in, and then unit C contained the existing single-story structure. Was in that shape, and then unit D, finally, another flag-shaped lot. In this particular lot, he would demolish the existing garage and shed and build a new single-family home, two-story unit. So that would comprise of the four homes that he wanted to create. This slide shows, in yellow, the two pre-existing non-conforming setbacks for those two units, unit A and unit B. In red highlights the newly added non-conforming setback, which is the area of the variance request because of the creation of the new lot lines. And I'll kind of walk through those. So unit B, which is in the back, the two-story unit, the new southerly property line that would be created would have a setback of 3 feet from that property line when 4.5 is required. Okay. So that's sort of the upper end of that red hash by unit B. Unit C is the front unit down on the lower parcel. The rear setback requirement is 5 feet there. The setback would have been 3 feet with the new property line proposed. So this is the red area that's on the left-hand and lower left-hand setback. And then unit D is the final, the new unit that would have two, so a variance request was required. So the Planning Commission went through the three findings that were necessary for a variance, and here they are listed here. One, that there was not a special privilege being granted to this applicant, based on other properties in the vicinity in the same kind of zone district. The second finding is that there's some kind of special circumstances to the property, either its size, shape, topography, or location, that warranted a different set of rules under that scenario. And finally, the project would still be consistent with our general plan and local coastal plan. The commission found that it was consistent with the coastal plan still because residential units were allowed in the district, but found that the project was inconsistent with the other two findings. So essentially, here's the tentative parcel map again. The applicant has submitted in his packet a different scenario where we would look at potentially a zero lot line concept, and so I've shown what that might look like, and I'll kind of flash back and forth, excuse me. So you can see where it's red, and then it goes white. So where it's red, that was the original proposal. Where it goes white, that would be if you did a zero lot line. So the new end of the reds would kind of essentially be the new property line boundaries, and the yellow would consume those whites for lot D. So lot D would get a little bit bigger, and it would pick up 3 feet between unit C and D and 3 foot between unit B and D. And it already had 3 foot between them, so then they would now meet the 6 foot setback, which would be consistent with a 5 and a 4.33. In order to do this concept, you'd have to be a program is a specific action that should be taken by the city. So this would direct the city and city staff to develop certain rules and regulations to put those policies into effect. Okay, the policies and programs that the applicant had put together are program LU 12.1, where it was a directive for the city to go out and change our zoning ordinance to provide these incentives for creating zero lot line concepts. That policy or that program is underneath policy LU 12. As you can read here, it just says it's pretty generic. The zoning ordinance shall include standards to ensure quality of development. So the city didn't have the time, resources, or money to go through the effort any sooner to develop these zero lot line concepts, so we didn't get those in place for this particular project. The second program that the applicant uses is program LU 15.1, which is the zoning ordinance should encourage inflexibility with these applications and standards, so we should allow sort of deviations with height and setback and lot coverage to allow imaginative design and unique products. Again, this was a program that was in place under policy LU 15 to sort of keep this human scale and maintaining this relationship with its surroundings. Again, that program did get put in place. That was a directive for the city to go out and change the ordinance. We're unable to get to that. And so essentially the only ways to get that was through the ability to use the affordable housing component to create these incentives. The applicant has chosen, for one, is not in the plan development overlay, so we can't use that. That doesn't work. The applicant was aware, I believe, of the affordable housing option and chose not to go that route, and so they didn't want to make that part of this project. So with that, the Planning Commission could not support the variance findings, and staff would conclude with those recommendations. The other piece is the open space. Here's a plan presented by the applicant. Kind of red hashed is all the areas that total the common area. The green hash is the private area. There's a requirement that the common open space equal at least 1,000 square feet for each unit. So that's roughly 4,000 square feet. If you add up all of the red area, it totals 4,000 square feet. And there were projects in the past that sort of used this method of calculating this open space. Since the new Planning Commission had been seated, they've had concerns over that layout and format of the open space, and so there was sort of a shift in thinking of what the usable common open space should look like and be like for these types of projects, and this applicant was sort of caught up into that in that shift. And so they felt that this layout wasn't consistent with this finding that was necessary under the ordinance. So with that, that kind of sums up the appeal that this applicant has made. Staff would urge the council to time.
It wasn't brought to their attention.
It was not brought to their
part
attention.
Of the report. Thank you.
And can that still be part of the appeal then?
Really, it's probably a different part because that was not brought up in the appeal action, and it was not one of the reasons for denial. So it should be a different action taken if this council decides to move forward on this project.
Okay, but it's legal for him to bring that forward?
Well,
it's not a problem.
He can mention it. I don't think the council should weigh any action or motion on that particular item. I think, as we've done in the past, if you move forward with the denial of this project under the appeal, and you can give direction to the applicant that if you choose to come back under that option, this is sort of how you're feeling towards that.
Okay. Other questions? Bill?
So if, for example, the council considers that the zero lot line might be something to at least look at, then what the council would need to do would be to uphold the appeal and then send it and the project back to the Planning Commission. Is that correct?
Right. With some direction about making the finding for the zero lot line, if that's of your liking.
Okay. Betty, any question?
Yes, it's probably one for the city attorney. I hear what is being said about the role of policy and the program and then the zoning ordinance implementing that. I look at that a little differently and feel like the general plan kind of guides us and tells us what our goals are to go. So I'm not having a difficulty with saying just because it's not in the zoning ordinance, it's not something that we want to do.
I don't think you're off base in your interpretation there.
Okay.
Your general plan, your local coastal plan, is at the top of the pyramid, mm-hmm. and that's your guiding document. And usually, although ours doesn't always track because we've done so many zoning amendments, and hopefully we're getting rid of all those, and I think that's what Melody was getting at. Hopefully your zoning ordinance is your implementing document, your program document that's going to implement all of those policies. Statements into your regulations. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, sometimes they don't always mesh together, and you know, then you can look to your original policy document, which you know you can call it the Bible, you can call it whatever you want, but that's your driving document, is that general plan, local coastal plan, that's at the top of the pyramid.
So whether or not it's in the zoning ordinance, it's still most viable.
Yes.
Okay. Other questions? The staff? Melody?
Can I just be clear here then that we've just established that program, as it's given here, that this policy and program are equal, whether or not it's put in the zoning ordinance. Is that the council's discretion, this lot line thing? Just to be very clear.
The zero lot line are we talking about? I mean, any way you go about this, a variance is required for your hearing tonight. If it's a zero lot line, that's new to me, and so I think Mike was right. If that's your direction, then it needs to go back. We need to look at how that would be approved as a zero lot line and what conditions need to be addressed for that. There's easements that have to go back and forth.
George, you can have 10 minutes as the appellant applicant.
George Contento, Morro Bay. Good evening, Mayor Pierce. Good evening, Morro Bay City Council. Why is such a good project having difficulty finding approval? I researched variance law and re-examined our own codes. I concluded that the legal strength of the project was its uniqueness, combining old and new. It may be one of a kind. It was so different that the planning process could not deal with it. It is important to connect the general plan, community housing project law, and this project. When the dots are connected, the project is not only legal, but a great example of the spirit and the intent of the law. The purpose section of the community housing program invites us to come into this code and do something creative and different. Listen to purpose number B. Promote greater individual choice in the type, quality, price, and location of housing. And Section F, expand and facilitate new opportunities for home ownership by those who may not be able to afford traditional types of housing. Our project will retain three modest homes whose average square footage is about 1,000 square feet, two of them single-story, and handicap friendly. They will sell well below the median price for Morro Bay. The main point of the community housing program, they just about say to divide these homes up just about any way you can to achieve the goals of the program. General plan program we've talked about, so I won't go into it in any depth. That was the one that said basically, mention the zero lot line and cluster concept for townhouses and combinations. I think that the spirit of that law is inherent in the community housing program law. I could find nothing in our codes that disallowed zero lot lines in community housing projects. In fact, the evidence is just the opposite. The law is asking for creativity. The only limits on a community housing project should be those spelled out in the code and those features affecting the neighbors, such as height, density, parking, and exterior setbacks. My first request is for permission to create two interior zero lot lines. The buildings have enough separation for fire safety, so this would legally remove the variances. Regarding open space, I gave the council a list of community housing projects I found in our area, where there were some 13 of them. They are examples of how the issue has been handled for decades. We comply with the law. I want to point out one thing about open space with the project. I did this because I could hardly understand plans, a lot of community open space. We can't label it that way, but that's where people play with their dogs and the kids play. It's relatively level and it's a lot of space. And people's entrances and garages are there, and that's where they meet, and that's where things happen. The last Super Bowl, this tenant opened up his garage. This tenant came over. Tenant next door came over, about three or four couples. They got the game in the garage right there, and the barbecue going in the driveway, and that was it. And that's the way this will live, no matter how you label it. Someone mentioned substandard lots. They are substandard, but creating small lots and unusual forms of ownership are supposed to happen in the community housing program to accomplish the goals. Our planning department once estimated that 75% of our single-family lots are substandard. The important thing is that we are zoned for four units, and we have four units. Another option would be to grant the variances. Our variances are of no consequence to the neighbors. On the north side, we have garage facing garage on the ground floor only. The second story is set back 3 feet to protect views and is legal. On the south side, a bedroom wall without a window faces a garage when compared to neighboring properties and those in the zoning district. About a year ago, a lot line adjustment was granted involving the two lots to the south, representing 50% of the other lots on our block. This resulted in exterior setbacks of just over 2 feet on each side, more serious exceptions to code than we are requesting. Also, when compared to other community housing projects, anyone can see that we are unique in that we combine old and new buildings. Condition B is a tougher one. It requires special circumstances with this property that would deny this project the privileges enjoyed by other properties in the vicinity and under identical zoning classification. The staff report does not follow the law because it does not compare us to other community housing projects with our identical zoning classification, which is a community housing project. I attached case law from the state variance trainer to verify this. You have to compare apples with apples. Again, refer to the list of the community housing programs in the area. None combine old buildings with new. This is critical because by saving our old buildings, we accomplish the goals of the community housing project better than anyone else. None of the others have units this small and thus more affordable, or have single-story handicap-friendly units. None. It would be relatively easy to demolish these homes and design a project that would not involve a variance and would have even more open space. However, this would likely result in two-story homes that would not provide the benefits of our project and unnecessary hardship. The variances do not amount to a hill of beans and are of no consequence to the neighbors. Thus, strictly enforcing code is unnecessary and would create practical difficulties. We have designed a terrific project under unusual and difficult circumstances. It delivers the benefits prized by the law and is friendly to neighbors. When this project is placed into the context of our laws, it is easy to find for a variance. I cannot figure out any legal reason to force this project in any other direction but approval. However, if the council denies both of my requests, please allow me to redesign this project and bring it back for another hearing. A new plan would likely involve four new two-story units. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of the applicant? No?
Yes? Yeah, you said that these would all provide houses that would sell at a price lower than the current market price is going. And, you know, we've had other applicants up here and tell us, oh, I'm going to provide workforce, or and then we later find, as you saw at the last council meeting, that they're not selling for that much. So what is your, are you still opposed to providing something like deed restricted at moderate income or to assure the council that these could be sold at something below market?
I think you basically, the one deed restriction I mentioned to the Planning Commission was deed restricting the height of the two front buildings. And back, that includes that garage that comes free, and it's a bonus room, but yet it's not attached to the house, really, except through the garage. I don't think I conclude that in the square footage. So you're talking about units, then B would be about 850. C would be about 1,050, 1,050, and A would be closer to 900. Now, remember, these are two-bedroom, one-bath, three-bedroom, two-bath, and two-bedroom, two-and-a-half. There's actually half a bath downstairs in the garage. Compare these units to what you have been approving lately. You have one-bedroom units these days coming in at higher square footages than these. You don't have to deed restrict anything. These are small units, and you know they're older. They're fine, but they're older, and they're not going to draw even median price. They're going to be on the lower end of the scale. I estimate, 425, 450, maybe five for the old for. Maybe the three-bedroom older one, but no view. So I mean, the market will provide the will make these more affordable compared to what could be done otherwise. If the project is made to go that way, would be four units more like Unit D. You know, you could easily accomplish that. Just imagine lifting up the two front, be affordable. There's no need to even go that way. They're just going to be that way.
Doug, do you have a question?
Yes. Would you explain to us one more time how your zero lot line adjustment would reduce all of these variances you're now asking for?
Yes. I would propose this. These are interior zero lot lines right here on this garage and right there. The main driving force behind that was when I read the law in more detail. We did request zero lot lines 3 years ago from planning. And the only reason why I got back into it was under the research and the reading the variance law and the state training thing, and it triggered this again. And really getting into the purpose section, which has been totally ignored by everybody. By the planning staff, and I don't blame them. I mean, they got a lot to do. You know, and by the Planning Commission. This has been totally lost, was why the gods created the community housing project program. And it literally says to go in there. It almost grabs you by the shoulders and says, get in here and, you know, make some different types of things happen. Cut it up any way you want. But and this does. I mean, these aren't. I'm not going to claim those are handicapped units, but they're single story and they're with darn good access. One of them you can walk right in, and the other one with a read. When you read the definition of community housing program, it runs through every type of division you could talk about, stock cooperatives, and it's saying get it done, get in here, be creative, get it done, divide it up any way you want to reach the goals of the program, which haven't been even been discussed. The first time they're being discussed are right here tonight.
Any? The variances versus the zero lot line. The zero lot line actually allows the back corner right unit to be enlarged at the expense of the two others, whereas the variance allows the two others to maintain a little bit of walking room around them. Is that right?
Well, what will happen, remember, it's just a lot. The lot line's drawn all over there, and what you're going to have are easements on top of them. So in practical use, there's going to be no implications. There'll be easements right up against that lot line, so that owner can maintain, wash their window, you know what I mean, or whatever. You know, it is just a line, and with no impact, virtually, especially here because we're not up against anything. We're legally separated enough for fire standards, and we even went so far where we are relatively close here. In the new unit, you're designing one, so you can design it to buffer it. We have no windows in this new unit that open. We're going to have glass block window here, but no windows that face there or open. It's negligible. It's just not there. There's no, as to the way the places will live, or it has no impact at all. It is just in the spirit of what the Community Housing Project is saying. You know, divide this up any way you can and get it done. Now, the only question I don't know is, I think what the law, to protect yourselves, I look at the law as saying inside that boundary of the, you know, the community housing project, do whatever you can. And I don't know, you might want to ask Rob is what you, I don't think what you would want is somebody to come back and be able to say, okay, I want zero lot line right up to the other neighbor's property. Now, see, that would be my red flag, and this is harmless, but if that sets a precedent for that type of thing, but I don't think it does because...
Okay, I think you've answered your question.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it... Yeah.
I have a question, too. Yeah. It seems to me that with a minor adjustment on the D unit, you would be able to build this project tomorrow as it is with two lots, where you'd have a secondary unit on each lot. Why did you choose to not do that when it would be so simple?
Well, it's basic economics. I probably wouldn't do that project. And in real estate, it will be worth more simply. In real estate, the smaller bit you break it up into, and this is why it's going to be affordable. You know, that gets back, you know, it's like a complete circle.
It's financial.
Yeah.
The reason
yes.
You didn't choose
yeah,
that.
But it also, don't forget that when you do that, you've totally lost all the benefits of the community housing project.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Any other questions for the applicant?
I'd like to hear from Mr.
Yes,
Ambo.
We were going to do that, but I wanted to make sure that we had all questions from the applicant answered. Okay? Okay. Thank you, George. You can sit down. Mr. Ambo.
Yes, Mayor, Council Members.
Squirming in your seat there.
I just want to try to point this out, that we're getting into this territory of zero lot lines. We don't have any provisions in the existing code to allow for that.
Right.
So that's not a tool that we can work with because it's not in the toolbox. I understand the policy framework. I understand the program framework. Unfortunately, that's not something that we can work with. And I also caution you because there are a number of other projects behind this that will be running that one into us quickly. So if you find that the project seems to fit in and you're okay with it, then please, I would encourage you to just find for, you know, in support of the variance and not rely on a system that we don't have codified yet, which is the zero lot lane procedure. Thanks.
Okay. And can we ask the city attorney if he has a reaction to the zero versus the variance?
Sure. Rob?
Well, I think Bruce is right. I mean, we don't have anything in our zoning ordinance that allows for it to occur, so we would be in uncharted territory there. I don't know if our new zoning ordinance picks it up. Does it deal with it with our new at all? I don't believe it does.
If it was an affordable project or if it was in a PD zone, there would be some basis for flexibility. Of which this
problem. What he was saying is there would be overlying easements that allow people access to their spots. It restricts people from putting plants right up against the other building because of the, even though they own that property, they really don't. And San Luis Obispo has done quite a few of zero lot line out towards the tank farm area. If you're familiar with that area, they've done quite a few out there. But, you know, they're complicated, and without having any implementing documents, staff wouldn't know what conditions to put on that. And that's why I think Bruce is steering you the direction of if you like the project and its benefits of the project, you're better off trying to make findings to approve the variance.
Okay. Any questions?
One more question.
Okay.
For Mr. Prater, probably. This is an R2 zone, two separate parcels. So what could the applicant be allowed to build as, you know, if we turn this down and send it away? I've looked at plenty of the lots around over in that neighborhood, what has been done to them. What could be done on these lots?
Well, essentially, he can build two primary units. So under the R2 standards, if he proposes a project that meets all the setbacks, the lot coverage, and the parking, there's no size limitation of the units. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, you can get as big as residential unit as you can fit on there with meeting all those criteria.
And right now, too, I think when I look through these papers that right now all of these lots are going to have 40% lot coverage rather than the allowable 50% or 39.9 or something like that. But I think all of them, maybe except for D, fall under the allowable lot coverage. Okay. Believe that. You don't make good money when you sell two lots like that. But I think also when we sell two separate houses with nice second units behind them, or second units behind them, that actually costs more than the four individual lots? Or is that what you meant by financial,
right,
or just?
Right. Well, it's financial both ways. The more you divide something, the less you can sell it for. But when maybe when you get done selling the four, you might end up more money than selling the two. However, the double-edged sword is that if that same principle of dividing it up into smaller pieces is what makes it work for your affordable housing and, you know, all the benefits that go along with the community housing project, the goals of the community housing project. I keep getting back to that. That same principle is what makes that go, what's going to make these units what they are, very, very modest units, you know, that are on average smaller than the one bedroom units you're getting through now. And so they're going to have a market. You know, your big money people are not going to come in here and buy these units. They're going to be, you know, maybe the little house in A will be bought, you know, for somebody's, handicapped parent, you know, and it's perfect, you know.
Okay. I think you've answered the question. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Any other questions for the applicant?
Just, yeah, you know.
We still have to get
to
the public hearing.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, I couldn't back that up, but you make it a condition. And if I go to an attorney and the attorney says, no, we can't do that, well, then I'm going to come back to you and say, I can't do that. So, but I think it could be done. I heard it's been done before. Maybe Rob has an opinion on it. But and but to me, that's a lot of value of the project.
Okay.
And
thank
you.
Yeah. That answered the question.
Yes.
Thank you.
One last question.
Okay, Pat.
Why aren't you willing to go to affordable housing in this project and just for get rid of the variance in that way?
Like one unit, you mean?
Whatever it takes. I mean, you keep talking about how these are going to be reduced and under, and
yes.
So let's talk about affordable housing. Why can't you?
I don't even know what the affordable housing would mean. Most of the affordable housing I have seen, I don't know if it has a lot of benefit. You've seen these affordable one-bedroom apartments come through, you know, that are very large, and you know, they're when you come to the affordable amount, it's more than the average going rent will be. So I don't know. I've never really got into that discussion. There are bonuses, I know, for affordable housing if you restrict one, and one would be a density bonus, okay? That would be one of the carrots held out to make one of these units for sale affordable. Well, we're already talking about all the things that are good about the project. Do we need more density?
You don't need more density, but you sure need something about those variances you're asking for.
So I believe I heard someone mention moderate income, which is 120% of the area median income. And I just went over this with another applicant. So the price for that, for a four-bedroom unit, is $268,000 to sell. So they deviate from there. So as the units get smaller, the price goes down.
Now relate this to the variances he's asking for in the project we're looking at.
Well, if one of those units was offered as an affordable unit and Mr. Condinto agreed and the council agreed, then you can use that as a mechanism to deviate from standards. Okay, so you can basically say, okay, it's not a variance now, it's a modification of the setback because we're offsetting it with an affordable component. We now have a setback of 3 feet versus 4.3 or 4.5 or 5 or whatever it is. So that's how the system works.
So he gives up something and we give up something.
Yep.
To come to an agreement. Thank you.
Right.
Okay. Thank you, George.
You're welcome.
This is a public hearing. If you wish to speak on this item, please come forward.
Frank Devine, North Morro Bay. I've been out to this site several times. I've walked the property. I've looked at the plan. I've talked to all of the neighbors. I've talked to Mr. Contento extensively on the project. I don't give very many endorsements, but this is a gem of a project. I have to take my hat off to Mr. Contento. Had it been me, I'd have just knocked everything down, built a gargantuan monster of a building, and not probably even worried about anybody's view, just long as I was legal to the letter of the law. But he cares about his neighbors. He's trying to work with what he has on the property. I think that makes it unique. You know, it seems like there's really a double standard here. You have 600 Morro Bay Boulevard that was given every giveaway you could possibly imagine, you know, like $250,000 worth of parking. The commercial parking was forgiven to make room for illegal residential development on the property. Just everything you can possibly imagine. And we can't give Mr. Contento a variance without all kinds of strings attached to it. The sizes of those units are going to keep them affordable. There's no reason why there should be affordable housing attached to it. You know, it just boggles my mind the double standard that I see when it comes to approval of projects. You know, someone who's a favored person, who people seem to like, or for whatever reason have connections, gets whatever they want. And somebody like poor Mr. George Contento over here gets, you know, stretched out and just, you know, twisted for everything you can possibly squeeze out of them. This is a good project.
and it keeps the character of the neighborhood. The zero lot lines that he's asking for are within the boundary lines of the project. They have nothing to do with the neighbors on the outside. Please approve this project. Have some integrity. Thank you.
Okay. Excuse me just a second. I am going to make a response to that because I'm getting a little tired of hearing it. There was no favoritism given to any specific individual, and there never has been. There's been no influence by a specific individual, and there never has been, either over this council or the Planning Commission. And I would really appreciate it if people would not continue to accuse us of that. Thank you. You may speak now.
Michael Durick from Morro Bay. Excuse me. A few months ago, I sat down here and I listened to you debate the project out on Alder Street. And what I'd like all five of you to do is think back to that night and what you agreed to do on that property, what you called open space, compare it to this project, and then think very clearly about what you've said about preserving the character of this community. This project addresses that in a big way. And I think it's incumbent upon you and the staff and the Planning Commission to find out a way to make this thing work as it's been proposed. This project should be approved. It fits and preserves the character of Morro Bay. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we'll bring it back to the council. Further questions about things, or do we want to go straight into comments? All right, who'd like to begin? Betty?
Did I see my hand go up?
I didn't see any hands go up. I just picked you.
Well, my thing with housing in Morro Bay is about the character and about preservation, and this is not my old neighborhood, but it's within six blocks of where I live and have lived. And I've not seen a project. I've seen other projects in the area that literally come in and do what others have said, and they knock down the old rather than try to enhance it or add to it. And I have to say I like this because of that. So the problem comes with the letter of the law at this point rather than the spirit of the law, which is usually the opposite for me in terms of the projects that we approve. So I'm having what do you do if they misses by, 1 foot, 2 inches? You know, is that really a to-do? I don't know if that's a to-do. I would absolutely want those front two houses height limit restricted because otherwise you lose the benefit. It no longer, they'll put up the houses that are the big box houses anyways. And when you look at those, it's like, why would someone buy a house behind a house anyways? I mean, I know that we're building houses like that, and we've built houses the same size behind each other. And at least this does offer some variety in terms of that. The smaller, the taller, the consideration of the whole block. I like the variance rather than the zero lot line because it allows the lots to be that one back lot doesn't get to grab from the other two. I look at the three things that we're supposed to look for if they are variances, and the two that no one has trouble with. The part about number two, due to special conditions or exceptional characteristics of this property, such as size, shape, topography, or its location or surroundings, I think some of that is the grandfathered in part. Makes it a little exceptional that it's maintaining the character of the neighborhood, I think makes it exceptional. The strict application of this title would result in difficulties and I don't know that unnecessary hardships, but certainly difficulties in terms of what is it that we want in terms of the goals that we want. So I think that we're addressing that one okay. Is there a grant of special privilege inconsistent with the limitations of other properties? I don't know that. I haven't delved into that. Mr. Contento has quoted properties where others have been given even greater exceptions than his. So, again, it comes back to the letter of the law. What's the difference of a foot? So, at this point, unless I hear other discussion, and I'm open to hearing other discussion, I'm leaning towards approving the project.
Okay. Dad?
Yeah, I'm looking at the issue that we're discussing, which is the Planning Commission decision to deny this based upon the variances that are asked for. When I looked into the three findings that we must make, I can make two, but I can't make number two, the second one. I see no special conditions or exceptional characteristics on this piece of property. It's flat, it's square, it's there. But we have heard that there is a way for the applicant to, by imposing affordable housing, to get away from the variances as such, and that'd be where I would like to see this council head.
Okay. Melody?
Well, there's things to like and not like about this project. And I have to say I was heartened by George noting that central area and talking about the way one fellow goes over and talks about Super Bowl with the other fellow, because when I looked at the plans over the weekend and saw where community housing is laid out, it is, as I was told today, these dog runs. And worse than Alder, in fact, they're little dog runs up behind people's houses. And so I don't like the way the community housing is laid out on the plans, but I was made more amenable to it with that discussion of the use of the driveways for people meeting and talking to each other and having barbecues. I am concerned with preserving the character of this town. And one of these homes I know is 88 years old, for example. Most people would go in and simply just bulldoze this. Would just ram them down and build big boxes, actually two-story boxes. And you know that I'm a big advocate for single-story housing. Now, being a big advocate for single-story housing, I'm really curious about Mr. Contento doing the work that we need to have done to deed restrict these as single-story. Because should he sell A or C there in the front, the new property owner has every right to bulldoze it and build a big two-story house out to the edges of the lot as a single parcel lot. And so I'm not as concerned about the variance, actually, because it is such a small, it's like a foot and a half or 2 foot here or there. I'm much more concerned about deed restricting those front houses if we can. It does say in the community housing code that the exceptions that we make are for affordable housing. And I think that I was surprised, actually, at the figure that Mr. Prater just gave, because I've been told that restricting housing to moderate income level usually keeps it at just below market value. That's not a heavy restriction on anybody. But deed restricting it out for 30 years allows us, for example, A, that nice small one. Now, everyone can point to that and say, well, it's a single story, 940 square foot. But let's say we don't have it deed restricted as affordable. That thing in 10 years from now could be skyrocketing in price, okay? Mm-hmm. If we don't have it deed restricted for a single story, that thing could be two stories in a heartbeat. In fact, most people would. Two bedrooms, one bath, a lot there. They'd come in and just knock it down and put up something else. Now, what I really, really, really like about this project, is that it is creative. I like that big openness in the middle. I like the preservation of the two houses in the front. The attempt that the applicant's making on the two houses to bring a porch under the front of one of the buildings so that they look similar to each other. The nice setbacks in front with actual yards. He's also going to take that big gravel drive, or not gravel, blacktop asphalt driveway that goes in there, and he's going to lessen the size of it within code to provide big garden space on both sides of it and thus beautify the neighborhood. So for my feeling, I would like to probably approve it with those conditions or to continue it to see what kind of discussions the applicant could have with his own attorney and with himself and talk about affordable housing, talk about deed restricting the height limit, and bring this back to us to see. Because overall, I mean, I think that this is the kind of project we need. But having been burnt by other applicants saying, oh, these are going to be affordable just because of their size and blah, 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 I'm not ready to just say, oh, they're affordable because of their size. Mm-hmm. It needs to go through the process of deed restricting it. And then we can make whatever exceptions we want to get this project done.
Okay, Bill?
First of all, let me say that I met with Mr. Contento today and did walk the project, so he and I have talked about it. Secondly, let me say this is probably the first time George and I have agreed on anything. we've been known to disagree slightly. I do like the concept of what he's trying to do. I think by nature of the existing houses in front that those houses, as well as even the new one in back, wouldn't sell for as much just because you have houses behind houses. So they will, even if he, D, I think, would sell for less money than if it were on its own lot somewhere, just by nature of location. The fact that the house on the lower left, A, is the one that's 88 years old, and the other one's, what, about 30 years or something like that?
1960, so.
Yeah, 45 years. Those houses, as they presently exist, even spiffed up, are never going to sell for a lot of money. Now, that's not to say down the road somebody couldn't come along, buy those front two lots or each one of them, and then flatten the house and build something else. So I think that I could certainly concur with the idea of some sort of restriction to keep those one story. And in Mr. Contento's right, if he wanted to, he could come along and just level all four of those houses and build four new ones, each one on top of a garage, and we wouldn't be here. He could just do it. And I think the fact that he's preserving those two somewhat eclectic houses in the front, I think, are the plus. And also, let's face it, B, although it's a lot newer, is not going to sell for as much as a new house would. So I think the project as it stands lends itself to be far more affordable housing than anything else we've looked at. And having said that, as I say, I don't know if which the best direction to go, but I would be willing to consider that this is a project that should go ahead.
Okay. I looked at it, and I agree with a lot of what's been said about the keeping the character of the neighborhood, and I appreciate that, too. I did also go out and look at the property with Mr. Contento. My concern is that we're making such small lots, and if it's my understanding is correct, the smallest lot is going to have the biggest unit on it, and that's where the variance problem comes in. So I guess what I was looking at is it would be such a simple thing to just make that unit a little bit smaller and not have your variance problems and have, you know, you've got a 2,364 square foot lot and the three bedroom, two bath house on that one. So it seems to me an easy fix to just reduce the size of that a little bit and you would have no variance problem. That would be my recommendation for the easiest way to solve the problem. If that's not what Mr. Contento wants to do, then certainly, you know, if he were to come back with long the deed restrictions for the front units or, you know, an affordable housing, something like that, or even come back with a project that reduces the size of that one, I don't know what the rest of the council would feel about that. But I think we're all in favor of the idea of preserving this little part of Morro Bay and the look of it. We're just not quite sure we've got the mechanism yet, it seems to me.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. What's the, and I think maybe it's for Mr. Prater, what is the implication of we allow this to go through, I'm going to say as the variance, and then you can address the zero lot line. We allow it to go through, you know, 20 years go by, these houses get knocked down or rebuilt. What happens at that point? Do they have to conform then to setbacks?
Good question. No, essentially what happens is they would be allowed to build within that new envelope that's been set. So
what does that mean?
Essentially what that means is if you approve a variance mm-hmm. for 3 foot, mm-hmm. the new house could come in at 3 foot.
Okay.
That's their new standard for that particular lot.
Madam Mayor, if I can add to that, it seems like if you're getting at the place where you may find in favor of this variance,
based on the existing character or maintaining the existing structures. It may be helpful to add a condition in there that restricts the use to keep the character that you're relying on that finding for. So, for example, it could be that deed restriction, or, for example, it may say that the whole purpose of this is to subdivide this so that you have legally transferable parcels of land. So, for example, when this, if this project goes forward, then you're going to have four separate pieces of land, and they may be under different ownership. And you may want to think about a condition that says, gee, when we approve this, we were looking at three existing structures, and then maybe have a protection in there that says we approve this as a community housing project, and if one of these is demolished or modified beyond, you know, the limits set forth and the restriction, then it triggers a review at the Planning Commission. So, well, and I'm only bringing that up because if we're using this to rely on as a finding of compatibility, then to balance it out, we'd want to make sure that we indeed ensured that they did what we found admirable about the project.
Well, I've got a question, too, on the open space. If we're agreeing that we're going to forfeit the idea of the open space because of this central area, and then somebody comes in and wants to remove A and change all that, does that create problems? I mean, with access and open space requirements for a community housing project, does that, how does that work?
It sounds essentially like you would be approving the configuration of this open space with the idea that even though the ordinance says you're not allowed to include driveways and parking aisles, mm-hmm. you would include that because that,
because it's there.
Because it's there, and in this case, it's actively being used for, you know, other types of uses, and it's conveniently being used for that. If this gets approved, and the units, the parcels are divided up, you'd have four sellable lots. You'll eventually have four separate owners. Each owner then could, within that lot, build a new house in accordance with the setbacks that are established with that approval, without the additional caveat that the two front houses or the three existing houses aren't maintained in their current status. The first thing I would do as a developer is buy one of the lots, demo the house, and build me a brand new house, because mm-hmm. now I have a new house with my new setback standards, and there's no provision to stop somebody from doing that unless we put some kind of a restriction on them. At that point, we're kind of getting into an area of we still have to maintain a livable unit. And if this unit is 88 years old, there has to be some provisions to allow it to be maintained, to be livable, so that it, you know, it's not being degraded over the years. So there's some nuances that need to be worked out, but it's all within realm of possibility.
Okay, well, going from the comments that I've heard from the council, what if we ask the applicant to work on this some more and to come back with any of the following or combination of a provision for affordable housing long term, or deed restriction, and or, this is all of these or none, deed restrictions for one story on the front, some sort of restriction that the allowable space on each of these very tiny lots can't be exceeded by subsequent building, or, and my suggestion, again, just make unit D smaller and it'll fit. Would that be agreeable to everyone that he come back with something, one of those or a combination of those for us to look at again?
I think this would certainly be worth the applicant having some time to think about it and talk about it and bring it back, because I think it's a very creative project.
Well, we also have to get findings to back all this up. So.
Yeah, but I think even your idea about reducing the size of D to get around those variances is another thing worth looking at, because very often it doesn't require much of a redesign for something
very
like
small.
That to happen.
And it is the smallest lot. That's my concern.
Mm-hmm. So I would be in favor of that.
Okay. So do we need a motion to that effect, or it's just instruction to the applicant to? Okay.
We'll need a motion to continue the item.
Uphold the appeal and continue the item?
Just continue. We're not into the appeal now.
Okay.
Okay. Can I hear such a motion?
That would be helpful if we had a date certain, or if it's indefinite, we'll need to renotice.
How long do you need? Month?
Maximum.
Okay, so first meeting in September? Okay. All right, and you said you do need a motion for that or not? Yeah, okay. All right, so I move that we continue this with
September 12th.
Suggestion to the applicant, continue it to September 12th with a suggestion to the applicant to come back with a revised project on any of the items we've discussed, including affordable housing, deed restrictions, reducing the size of Unit D, or any combination of the above.
Future review by Planning Commission if it's torn down?
Adhering all of those things. That do we need to specify everything, or we can just leave? Okay, you heard us. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. Thank you. That's one down.
Short break, maybe?
Okay. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll hit to B2. 5 minutes, no more.